Welcome to Masters of Dispute Resolution on Podclips. This podcast is designed to offer valuable perspectives and insights to individuals engaged in the mediation process. Listeners will benefit from the experience of the profession's most accomplished mediators who share compelling stories of conflict and the lessons they have learned from handling challenging and intriguing disputes. Throughout the episodes, you will hear firsthand accounts of how conflict has impacted the lives of those involved and discover how mediation enables individuals to move forward free from the burden of ongoing disputes. The discussions on this podcast provide practical guidance on addressing and overcoming difficult issues, helping listeners achieve more satisfying outcome in mediation. Whether you're a mediator, an attorney, or someone who has participated or is considering participating in mediation, you'll find actionable advice and encouragement. Your host, Len Levy, is a mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading provider of alternative dispute resolution. Len brings extensive experience, having litigated complex cases for over 30 years before transitioning to mediation in 1998, and has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution beginning in 2014. Len Levy's expertise and dedication set the stage for insightful conversations and meaningful learning for all listeners. And now, your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Season 6 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast designed to add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. Now, in each podcast, you've been hearing a story about conflict, the impact it had on the lives of those involved, how resolution was achieved, and the lessons learned from both the conflict and its resolution. Many of the details may be altered to maintain the essential confidentiality of mediation while still capturing the core of the conflict and its resolution. Today, joining me is retired judge Vedika Puri, who is has quickly gained a reputation that was built for moving entrenched disputes toward resolution. And it's a reputation that was built handling disputes that arose in the context of settlement conferences when Judge Puri was an active judge. And what is very interesting about her background is that essentially, prior to her judicial appointment, her litigation and trial practice included representing both plaintiffs and defendants in high stakes matters with particular depth in insurance coverage, which covers an awful lot in terms of substantive areas. She's tried dozens of jury and bench trials across a wide variety of civil disciplines, gaining firsthand insight into how cases actually unfold in the courtroom and how juries truly respond to evidence, credibility, and risk. And that trial grounding continues to define her work as a neutral. She basically has sat in every seat that matters when cases are evaluated, tried, and resolved, both as an attorney and a judge. I could continue to go on, but I would rather listen to Vedika Puri talk about the case that we are going to be discussing now, and take it away, please.
Hi there. Well, with that introduction, my goodness, I hope I live up to the hype. Thank you for that. Great to be here. Great to be with you. I am thrilled to talk about the case that came to mind when you and I were discussing this podcast. It has, I think, I don't know, all the elements of a Netflix special built right in, and you can't just pigeonhole it. I can't just say, oh, it was an insurance coverage case, or it was an intersection of probate, family law, and corporation law, if you can believe that. It was a conflict spanning generations. At the heart of it was a very tight-knit family, very large Chinese family, where the father, the head of the whole show, had immigrated to this country as an eighth grader and had no more education than that, and using just his sheer skill and savvy, created a multi-million dollar business. It was a transportation business out of the East Bay here up in the Bay Area in Northern California. And he landed many, many government contracts, created many different companies under his umbrella. And as his children grew, he had four children, they were groomed and trained to be part of the family business. And that's exactly what they did. The background of this father, after building this amazing company and being married and having these children, his wife tragically passed away at a very early age. Yep, go ahead. I saw a hand gesture.
We're good. I'm engrossed.
Oh, good. So the wife, the mom of this family, the heart and soul of many families, we all know that, she passed away from cancer. And before she passed away, she created a series of trusts for her children. She knew that the family business was booming, and she wanted to make sure that these very young children, the eldest was 12, would be protected after she passed. And that factors into the story later on. So father picks up the pieces of the family, does the best he can. He remarries. He has another child. And the family is doing the best they can. The businesses are rocking and rolling. And father is aging. He is putting into law a succession line, if you will. There is rumble about that. The only daughter handles all the finances. It makes sense that perhaps she's the successor, but there are sons involved. There's a whole saga that's going on behind the scenes, but is not unusual for a family of this size and when there's this kind of wealth at issue. That's the background.
Let me interject something. So we have three of the children, if I'm hearing correctly, that are covered by the mother's trust that she set up, a fourth child not covered by the mother's trust, and the daughter is of the first marriage?
Correct.
Okay. So you're dealing with, going into this, you're dealing with cultural issues with sons and daughters. You're dealing with intergenerational issues. And you're also dealing with a sibling who shares the father, but not the brothers. Okay. Sounds absolutely like a plate of spaghetti you're going to have to untangle.
You got
it. How did all of the conflicts arise in this?
So we fast forward from the family picking up the pieces and dad getting remarried about 10, 15 years. One of the sons goes to dad and says, listen, I think there's some kind of accounting problem with company X. Dad, just let me just see the books. Let me just make sure everything's okay. Dad says no. So son gets really worried. Son goes to the siblings. They try to sort it out internally. The fight gets more and more heated between dad and son strikes out and files a single count complaint against dad for accounting. Now, dad goes nuclear. This is not only a tight-knit family, there is a major cultural component here. In the Asian cultures, sons and children do not sue the parents. There is great deference given to your elders, and the idea of even fighting with them, let alone filing suit, is kind of unheard of. So dad is old school. In going nuclear, he hires a New York law firm and says, go scorched earth. And what ensues is a series of cross complaints and amendments that not just obviously don't impact just the one company in the accounting. Now suddenly we're into all the companies. And the reason the case finally came to me was because dad is suing to undo the trust that mom put into place. Dad says, no, it was never intended that these children of mine from my first wife should be in this kind of a position. I'm going to undo those trusts. So that's how it landed in my lap. We had, I don't know how many complaints.
So the effect of undoing the trust, if that was what was going to take place, would be what?
To essentially disinherit the three children from their rights in any of these companies and essentially the family wealth. It would get them out of the companies, off the boards, and ensure that they didn't have a future income stream. I mean, it would have been the worst of all scenarios and exactly the opposite of what their mother had intended when she created these trusts. It was a incredibly fraught situation when it first came to me. As you can imagine, emotions were high on both sides, and the kids felt that they had spent their lifetimes taking care of their father and his legacy, and now suddenly for him to be upset because of accounting issues and take it out on them in this fashion was unfair.
So we're talking about multiple sessions of a mediation that is going to take place. Before we start the game, so to speak, let me understand. You've got three children, two sons and a daughter, opposing the father. You've got a minor child?
The minor child and the new wife are with the dad. So they're all together, and it's only dad's name on the lawsuit, but he is with his new wife. And the minor child is not a player. He's certainly not present. He's in school, but his rights are very much front and center.
That's where this thing sets up. How did you initially approach this when you got this assignment? Was there a trial looming, or what was going on?
Yes, indeed. The reason it came to me is trial was set for, I think, 2 months away, which sounds like a long time, but in trial universe, it is not. All your deadlines are hitting. Mm-hmm. Your experts have to be wrapped up. Your discovery has to be produced. So they had done a bulk of the work to get ready for trial. And they thought, let's just give this one try. We think everyone's going to be unreasonable. Both sides thought, well, the other side's never going to settle, but we'll give it one good try. I don't think they thought it would take more than one session. I think both sides were coming in good faith, quote unquote. I put air quotes around that. You folks can't see me doing it, but, and so it was worth the effort just to see if we could maybe stave off trial. So that's how it came to me.
Was this pre-COVID, this dispute?
This dispute began pre-COVID. The mediation took place just last year, 2025.
Were the parties wanting to have this in person?
They did. I was surprised, but they all wanted to come in person. I was happy for that. You know, Len, we can do magic by Zoom, but it's always great to have the in-person eyeball to eyeball, shoulder to shoulder, who's banging what door at what time. And so they did. Right. They came in person.
This is set up for a very interesting series of conversations, Vedika, that you are going to be having with these folks. And I can't wait to hear how you decided to approach this, which we will do after a break. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution. Our guest is Judge Vedika Puri, and I am Len Levy.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. And we are engaged in an incredibly complex story about a family that is on the verge of trial. And they come to Vedika Puri and perhaps reach a resolution that satisfies everybody. Does it work?
That is the question. We start at day one, which we thought would be the only day. It turned out to be more than that. But day one, the families come in. And as anyone who has done a emotionally charged mediation knows, we put folks literally on the other ends of the offices so that they don't have to run into each other. So I've got all the grown kids with their counsel on one end of the office, and I've got dad, new wife, and an assistant in the other end of the office. And we start. And the dad tells me his life story, that he came from nothing and made this empire. And it was a very compelling story. Dad was as wily as he was charming. And you're compelled by his life story. Any immigrant that listens to it, anyone that would listen to it would think, wow, this guy has made it. And you want to help him. You want to do what's right by him. After hearing his story, though, the tune and the tone shifted when he started talking about the children as grown-ups. He felt that they had become greedy and that they were overreaching, and that is why he was justified in what he was doing. And he knew he was engaged in scorched earth. Interesting, right before the mediation, he had fired the big time New York law firm and he had hired a solo practitioner who was local. I will tell you now that that lawyer ended up being the key to helping me that day. This lawyer had the client's confidence. He had, I don't know how, but he had developed a relationship quickly with dad, and dad trusted him so that when dad would get difficult on certain points with me, the lawyer would step in and say, you know what, dad, Judge Puri's right. And I think we have to listen to what she's saying. So we started the morning session like that, Len. I listened to dad and I didn't do a lot of talking. I just wanted to hear from dad, and mom was quiet, the new mom, new wife, and the assistant was just taking notes. So it was dad's show, and I'm glad we had that time because I got to really kind of know his personality, and I could see the shift between his life story and then talking about his adult kids. And I thought, okay, we've got our work cut out for us. He was clearly upset.
Had you talked to the attorney before the session?
Absolutely. It's the golden rule that I've learned from all my mentors and having done many, many, many mediations, mandatory settlement conferences, as a trial lawyer, then on the bench, and now. That is an incredibly important part to laying the foundation. So I had spoken with the new lawyer, and I really liked his style. Very straightforward. And he told me, listen, I've just come into this, but I feel like I have dad's trust. And I want to calm things down. And I thought, wow, well, that's the goal, is to make sure that we're not emotionally fraught. I talked to the lawyer for the grown children, and they said, we've seen it all over the last 6-7 years of scorched earth litigation, and we don't have confidence in the new lawyer because we were so badly scorched by the old lawyers. So we don't know what we're walking into, but we're putting our faith in you to help us through the process. So no pressure. So I'd done the prelims. I now go over to kid's room and I said, guys, I'm sorry it's taken me so long to get over to you. I normally don't like to leave that much of a gap, but let me hear from you. And what was interesting between the three grown children, they all had their spouses there. The spouses also worked for dad. I mean, this was a true family enterprise, and the grown kids were financially reliant on dad because this was their livelihood too. So they were suffering, not just emotionally, but dad had slowly but surely iced them out of the companies. That was part of the lawsuit too. So they were suffering financially. The eldest daughter told me just these heartbreaking stories of how she remembers going to the companies with her mom, who's now passed, when she was little, and how they would pray every time they opened a new company for the success of the company, and how devastating it was for her to lose her mom so young. And she remembers her mom pulling her in a couple days before she passed and saying, "You have to take care of your brothers and your father, period. I know you're just barely a teenager." And she took that very seriously. That was her mom's last wish. And now for her to fast forward and be iced out of the thing that she spent her lifetime helping her dad build, she wasn't angry. She wasn't mad. She was just so deeply saddened by the situation. So I listened to her story, and I listened to the sons, and they all had a certain level of fear of dad. Their lawyer had been the same one from the get-go, so he had been the constant for them, advising them through all this. And I think he provided a lot of stability for them where there was chaos with dad. So that was the morning. It was gone in just trying to get the family dynamics down, let alone talking about the trust and probate laws and how that was going to work. And I really, the thing that threw me, the twist, you think there may not be anymore, but there are. It was around lunchtime. And I go back into dad's room to say, okay, I've talked with the kids and we got to talk turkey now. We got to start talking numbers and properties. These company owned a lot of properties. That was how we were going to try to resolve some of this, who gets what property and or what company. And suddenly the assistant, who had been quietly taking notes all morning, starts to talk a little bit more. And I'm grateful for any input to help me figure out dynamics. I'm thinking, this is great. Suddenly, she's the only one talking. And it looks like she's talking on behalf of dad and new wife and the youngest child. And I'm looking at the lawyer like, is this okay? Is this? And the lawyer is deferring to her too. That was our surprise twist before the lunch hour. The first day. And after lunch, assistant takes on to me a whole new role. She is now suddenly the one in control of dad's room. And it was shocking to me. So I'm careful, I think, as all mediators are, when you separate the lawyers from their clients. Sometimes it's necessary, but I was very careful. And in this instance, assistant asked to talk to me directly. I looked at lawyer, I looked at dad, I said, whatever you think. And they said, sure, you can talk to her. She pulls me out, and Len, she tells me a story for the ages. She's been at dad's side for 30 plus years. It sounds like before mom was even on the scene, the first wife, helping him form these companies. She's seen these kids from when they were teeny tiny to now. She has a lot of opinions on them being greedy and overreaching. And she tells me she had an affair with dad. And so she's got her own entire agenda going on that I wish, I gotta tell you, I've seen a lot of stuff over my 35 years or so practicing and on the bench. Nothing like this. And I had to hold my facial expressions together to not seem completely surprised by this information. And excuse me, I'm just going to move here for a second. And I went back in and said, you know, I need to talk to lawyer for just a second. I pulled lawyer out and I said, listen, I'm sensing that assistant is starting to take over and that this is problematic. She's not a decision maker from what I can tell. She didn't sign any of the paperwork here. While she may have information, I can't have her take over. Lawyer says to me, and we're going to talk about this in our next segment of takeaways, but lawyer says she is incredibly helpful. Dad will start to become unhinged, and she's the only one that will be able to talk him down. you and me, Judge, we need her present. I'm like, oh my goodness gracious. I said, got it. Understood. So I had to treat her with all the deference I was treating Dad, but also every once in a while when she would take over, I had to kind of shift and say, well, let's pause. Dad, what do you think about that? So the way that the afternoon got structured is we came up with a list of the various companies and properties and literally assigned values to them. And then we're trying to divide them amongst the various parties to see, is there an equitable way? If the trust was to go away, for example, all these assets could be divided now, and that would give the kids a financial security for their future. And it would let Dad know, feel like he had achieved something by undoing this trust, and he could move forward in the way he wanted to. So the list was important, which will also come into our takeaways session. And we went to work. Dad and new wife were talking amongst themselves, looking at the list, carving it up. Kids talking amongst themselves. I was the shuttle diplomacy person. Every once in a while, someone would say, well, what do you think about us getting this property? I would relay it to Dad. And we went like this, back and forth. But there came a point where the most valuable properties, imagine that, became the bone of contention. And it was clear that neither side wanted to move. Both sides wanted those properties, period. Lawyers for the kids. Again, this was the constant firm. They had been there from the beginning and seen it all kind of. They said, Dad is just not rational, Judge. Dad's just not rational about this stuff. And we feel like we've come to the end of our rope of being rational ourselves. I think we just need to let a trial judge decide some key motions. And then maybe then we can come back to you. But this has been good, but never mind. We're good. We're good for the day. I went back to Dad's room and I said, we're losing steam. We've got to do something to keep the momentum going. And Len, it was out of a movie. Dad essentially starts to have a temper tantrum. He perceives the kids to be the ones that are the problem and blowing up this effort. He threatens to walk out. He says, I'm older. I'm not well. This is not for me. I don't want to do this either. Now, we've made certain progress. We have agreed to a certain level of these properties. And the last thing I want to do is lose that momentum. But I had to accede to the parties. There came a point. We had to call it for the day. And they asked me if I could do the next day. It was like a Monday. And they said, well, can we come back Tuesday? I said, no, it's not how this works. I wish I could rearrange my schedule. If I'd known it was 2 days earlier, I would have. So they said, well, we'll come back. We'll go maybe get some rulings from the judge and we'll come back to you. So to me, I thought, I don't think I'm going to see these folks again.
So you're recognizing that the dynamics are such that forcing a settlement or trying to force a settlement might be counterproductive. And so what you're trying to do is determining what is possible on that day is something that that you had to do. Because, you know, and I've seen it myself, where if you try to push too hard, if you try to get across the finish line before the parties are ready to get across the finish line, it can blow things up. And
it can backfire. Exactly.
Right. So before we take a break here, let me just ask, the idea of getting the judge's rulings, was that something that they came up with or something that you just perceived based on what they had been saying?
No, I think we all knew. I had talked to the lawyers ahead of time. The motions were all teed up, the motions in limine. And so what they were looking to me for was a handicap. They asked me, what do you think? How's the judge going to rule on ABC, which would be pretty determinative of the case? So we all knew that these motions could be critical. And I was arguing in both rooms, you know, this is what I think. Heads up. This is just what I would do. I don't know what your judge is going to do. But let me tell you, having sat on the bench for this number of years,
chances are high your judge is going to rule this way. And I think that helped calm the situation down. It didn't get us over the goal line, but it did calm things down for the moment. And that's why they said, well, maybe we'll go get her rulings and then come back.
One of the tools that we can use as mediators is assessing when to push, when not to push. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution. Our guest is Judge Vedika Puri, and I am Len Levy.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Len Levy. Or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and my guest is Judge Vedika Puri. And we're going to be hearing how this dispute finally was resolved and what Judge Puri did to resolve it. So take it away, please.
Here we go. So everyone leaves after day one. I'm not sure I'm going to hear back from them. And within about a week, I do some follow-up, as all good mediators do. Neither side wants to ever look weak in reaching out to the mediator first. So the follow-up was successful because Dad's lawyer said, I've been talking to him. He liked the way we were proceeding. He just got upset at the end. I think I can get him back to the table. I went over to kids' lawyers. They said, we'll come back, but we don't want the assistant there. And wow. I said, well, wait a minute. My understanding is she is very helpful to, frankly, just the historical information. And I feel like I have a good enough relationship with her. She's not running the show. With that assurance, everyone came back to the table. I will tell you, we did a hybrid this time. Dad was in person and kids were so upset, they wanted to be by Zoom. So I got everybody's consent ahead of time, and that's how we did it. This time, everyone's sleeves were rolled up. People were ready. We had the list of properties and companies ready to go. There had been a dispute over some of the valuation. We got that sorted out ahead of time. So we were all working on the same page. That allowed for us to make some good, serious progress. Now, I will tell you, there was about 10 properties, the most valuable of them all, that were the sticking points from day one, and they remained the sticking points in day two. It came to the point where I felt both sides were just not wanting to move. I could not talk sense into either side in terms of a compromise has to get made. Someone has to agree that this property is going to go into this column. And I did something I've never done before, which was a lightning round. I went into the kids' rooms and I said, listen, I want you to take another look at this whole darn list of the contention properties. And I want you to give me your wish list. I want your just period. I don't want you to look at this and look at the wish list. And I remember the kids' lawyers had his hands on his head. He's like, well, I said, you got to do this with your lawyer's approval. Talk to him first. And within about 10 minutes, I got the wish list. And this is now, we're late. We're about 6:30 at night now. I go over to Dad's room and I said, we're doing a lightning round. I will stay however long we need, but this is their wish list. And now I want your, without thinking about it, without staring at the numbers and the history of this, and give me your wish list. And if you can believe it, there was accord on most, I think it was 90% of the properties. So we were able to ink a deal that night. And as to the 10% that was left over, I said, now you got to fight about this 10%. Go do it. That part I can't help you with. You got to get some judges' rulings. You got to take care of it. I get it. So we had a vast bulk of the estate taken care of. From, to me, that was important because that I read all the documents. I sat in probate court. That was mom's intent. And the whole point of probate court is to give the, make sure that the intent of the deceased is followed. Otherwise, what's the point? So I was very happy that we preserved and took care of mom's intent. And this 10% of property left over, we needed the judge's rulings. That's just how it was going to be. And that's okay too. So we wrapped it up, and both sides, I think, were okay having had years of fighting with leaving this 10% out there to be dealt with by the judge, but wrapping everything else up. We figured out a way to do it. We came up with the, I think it was a 2 or 3 page MOU that night to make sure that everything was signed and done. And it took several more weeks to do the final settlement agreement, but that's how it goes. Touch wood, it got wrapped up. Fast forward, judge made her rulings, and the sides settled the final 10% amongst themselves.
Wow. It never had to go to a full-blown trial.
Correct. It did the motions in limine, and then that settled the final. And what was great is that during the session 1 and 2 with me, the new lawyer for dad and the existing lawyer for the kids really built a relationship such that when I stepped out of the process, they got the judge's ruling. They didn't have to come back for day 3 for that final 10%. They trusted each other enough to get it done.
Okay. So, wow. The takeaways from this, from your perspective, what advice would you give to attorneys who were in the position of the attorneys in this case?
So the thing that made the biggest difference, and it's hard, I know the prep is always hard. Attorneys are so busy with their other cases. They don't have a lot of time to invest in a mediation brief and doing all the things, and it costs money. They want to settle for a reason. But if we had had, I think, an agreed upon list, for example, for the real estate properties, the numbers, the valuation ahead of time, that would have made, I think, things a lot smoother. We did by session 2, and perhaps it took session 1 to get there. But if there are assets at issue like that, and there's a list, things are reduced to a list, if we can get a accord on that list ahead of time, that is my biggest piece of advice to the lawyers. And maybe the lawyers can't work it out, there's too much friction, then get your mediator involved beforehand and say during our pre-call, listen, I think we're going to have a problem because we've got some really important properties and there's a disagreement on valuation. Anything that we can do to set up the mediation to be smoother.
Okay, so the agreement that was reached essentially resulted in going separate ways, correct?
Correct. The children no longer worked for dad, but they were given their interest in the companies and real estate in accord with their value of the trust. So they felt that they got what their mom intended. Dad felt like he said, you know, I'm done with having the kids work for me. We organized that in a way that hopefully the goal is that the kids and the dad at some point, someday, talk again.
Mm-hmm. So you were able to reach a settlement, but it was not a reconciliation.
Correct. I think the ship had sailed. I think the years of litigation had taken their toll. There was no mending those fences, given what both sides had been through, whether it was perceived or real. So the fact that we were able to disentangle the kids from the dad's company yet give them value for what they believe they were owed, I think was the best path. And my, as I talked to the kids afterwards, I said, my hope is that it'll take a while. Let the dust settle from all of this. And then maybe you can start talking to dad. And it doesn't have to be about the companies anymore. You have your shares, you have your properties. You can just be about him and how he's doing and vice versa. And there's grandkids involved too. We want them to know their granddad. So I haven't followed up. I would like to though, and find out if the family's talking again, but I think this was the healthiest outcome for what had become a very toxic situation.
I'm curious too, were the attorneys also Chinese?
No, they were not. I take that back. There was a team for the kids. So there were some just American folks, and there was one Chinese associate for the kids. And then for dad, the ultimate lawyer was an African-American gentleman. So okay. All over, we had the smorgasbord, a diverse team, all of us.
So to what, and the reason I asked that question is, to what extent did a deep understanding of ethnicity get into the resolution of this case?
I think the reason dad agreed to me and ultimately settled was because as the first Indian American judge on the San Francisco Superior Court, I was able to talk to him about that. I was able to talk to him about my own father and mother, and I truly understood the dynamics. I did my college back in Bombay, India. I lived mm-hmm. with my grandparents. So I think it gave me street cred with dad, and the kids loved it because they felt someone could get through to dad that understands. And we had many interesting things in common in terms of our families. And so I was able to talk to both sides about that. So I think that came into the cultural aspect was critical for building trust. At the end of the day, numbers are numbers, property is property, but I think it really helped.
And one of the lessons that I'm hearing as well is that, and I don't think people are aware of this, in most mediations that are interpersonal kinds of mediations, not traffic accidents where they're never going to meet or things like that, right. It is important for the mediator to give and to not just to give advice, but also to give something of themselves up as a means of building that rapport.
You know, I wasn't going to say this, but now that you said that, the reason I connected with the eldest daughter, when she talked to me about her mom passing and how profound it was for her, she talked about the fact that her mom had cancer, and any one of us in the audience that's ever been touched by cancer, you know what I'm saying. And I was able to tell her that my mom passed of cancer and that I understood the exquisite pain that comes along with that. And I think that's how I was able to secure her trust. We had that bond. And till today, I think about her and I wish her well. And so I think you're exactly right, Len. It's when you're willing to be vulnerable and open and establish that bond that things can really open up and change the dynamic of how the day works.
When parties come into a mediation, they come in with some preconceived notions of the mediator, I think. When it's H-O-N before the name, and there is a perception that is necessary to put in a proper context for the mediation. And how do you handle that?
You know, it's I love it on the one hand because there's a stereotype associated with judges and that, you know, we don't know what's going on in real life and that maybe we're not real human beings. And I diffuse that and dispel that right away. I think having a sense of humor, having a life experience that you're willing to talk about, and just connecting on that level, people get it. People are like, okay, this lady seems to be making a little bit of sense. And so if I can do that on behalf of all my judicial brethren and dispel those notions that this is an amazing group, particularly my folks, San Francisco Superior, I love them the most, of incredibly intelligent, incredibly hardworking, and just wonderful human beings behind these decisions, then I've done my job.
Well, you did your job very, very well. And to untangle this sort of mess in the manner in which you did it is really impressive. And unfortunately, we're out of time. You and I have gotten to know each other a bit going into this. And I love our conversation. And I think our audience will understand that this is a conversation that will impart to you some really valuable tools that are not always present in a mediation. I thank you, and I appreciate your coming on the show, and hope to have you as a guest again. As we wrap up, how can listeners contact you and learn more?
Couple different ways. My case manager is Kathleen Emma. If you look up judgepeary.com, you'll see her information. And my email is judgepeary@adrservices.com. That's the best way. And Len, you're a mensch and the best. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, who's my engineer and producer. I'm your host, Len Levy, and this is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Invigen Labs, Inc. I hope you'll continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.